will say about Semyon Varlamov, and this goes back to what we were saying earlier about weak goals, is Varley.
Varley, you guys are buddies.
You can just call him Varley. You guys go way back.
Oh, Semyon, we're on a first name basis.
Semyon Varlamov's Achilles heel is consistency. I think he's one of the best goalies in the world when he is on, but when he is not on, he lets in goals that he should be stopping. And they're
he's not the best goalie in the world. You can't be the best goalie in the world and be so hot and cold.
Okay, saying when that's he's like, on, if he's I one had of the best game in my life in the NHL,
I'd have a great game.
You can't say that if when he's on his game, he's the best goalie, because you can say that every goalie in the world in the NHL.
All right, guys. I won't hold you down.
Nine shutouts in my career, fellas.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many games I played, but I didn't get nine shutouts. I know that.
Last season, I got two shutouts in the same year, and that was the only time in pro I did that, and I was so fired up.
That's sick.
Yeah, that's better.
Not nine in a row. That's just crazy.
It's video game numbers.
Yeah. It is.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Roundtable Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Phillips, joined with me by my two co-hosts.
I'm your host, Jamie Phillips.
You could even get that.
I was waiting for a reaction too. I shouldn't have looked at the camera. Okay.
No, keep going. That's no. Spin.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Roundtable Podcast. I'm Jamie Phillips. Joined with me today are my two co-hosts, Derek Bougien and Mike Albanese. How's it going, fellas?
Great.
Oh, we got to get your word count up on these things. I was going to let you go first, but you hesitated there.
Hey, words should be weighed, not counted, right?
That's not bad. Listen, yeah, but guys, I got something.
Words are wind. Who? What's that from? Game of Thrones. Read a book.
I should have known that. I feel bad about myself.
Yeah. Are you one of those guys that likes Game of Thrones?
Who doesn't about. Like Game of Thrones? What do you mean? You don't like Game of Thrones?
I think I've seen one episode. It wasn't really my thing.
You didn't get it, though. That's why. It was too confusing for you.
Yeah, because you're right, a nerd.
Yeah. Who's a nerd?
Albo.
Oh, yeah. Albo's a nerd, yeah.
Have you watched Witcher, though, on Netflix?
I did see. I watched a little bit of it. I get bored quick, though.
Liked that's, it. It was good.
Hard hit. Henry what's Cavill.
Henry yeah. Cavill.
I kind of want to watch it.
It's good.
Yeah, I was liking it. Did you watch Frontier with Jason Momoa?
Oh, Albo, you need to cut it out with this show. This is like the most
Derek
Canadian.
Derek hates this show.
It's horrible because it looks like, what's that other Canadian show that was terrible that you Vikings? Made me watch? No,
that
Canadian
I made you
show.
Watch.
Well, you know, like you see it on when
Tutors?
You come home from school. You come home from school.
Murdoch Mysteries?
Murdoch Mysteries.
No, you didn't think about Murdoch Mysteries.
Same type of production value as Murdoch Mysteries, where if you're just a Canadian, you're embarrassed. You're just embarrassed to watch this show. Come on, it was horrible.
Yeah, our podcast is better production than a lot of Canadian TV shows.
Speaking of Canadian TV shows, Schitt's Creek is good.
I actually heard good reviews about that.
Oh, Schitt's Creek is a must watch. Must watch. Eugene Levy and his kid and the rest of them are all fantastic.
But I've not watched Frontier because I am not a big Jason Momoa guy, man.
I think
you do know Jason Momoa is in Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah, I know. He's called Drogo, but doesn't mean that he wasn't the whole show.
No, but he was integral. He was a big part.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that I think I go out of my way to watch him. Like, I watched that one where he Aquaman, I just did not enjoy it one bit.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Why?
Because I was on a plane.
First of all,
that's why I watched it.
DC doesn't know how to do movies. They don't. DC has made three good movies in their entire existence: Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Rise of the Dark Knight, or whatever the one that last one was called. Those three movies are up here, and the rest of the DC universe is terrible.
No, I'm just saying I'm not a big Jason Momoa guy, so I haven't gotten to Frontier, and it's just like I honestly thought that Frontier was the same show as Vikings, so then I was just like, well, I didn't like Vikings, so I'm just not gonna watch Frontier.
But Frontier is cool because it's Canadian. It's like the story of the Hudson's Bay Company.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool. Because I do like Canada things. But
yeah, but it's bad. It's not, bad.
Okay. You know what? I'll just not watch it, and then you guys can both have your views. I'll just be right in the middle.
All right. Okay. I do have something I want to talk about.
All right.
Because it is getting late. This is – so I got a phone call today from a AHL GM, and we were just talking. We were shooting the shit, and he filled me in on a goalie that played Division III at Norwich University. So Division III, he played from 2016 to this year, and he just signed a two-year – AHL deal with the Rockford IceHogs. Listen to this stat line, all right? 27 games played, a goals against average of 0.77, and a save percentage of .967. And he finished the year with 9 consecutive shutouts. That's you have insane. To be kidding me.
That's insane.
That's insane.
How have we not heard about that? That sounds like it would be like in the news.
His name is Tob Aubron, and he is from France. So trivia guy Elbow, who is an NHL goalie that came from France?
I know this one.
I know Jamie knows this one. Yeah, oh yeah.
That one's absolutely easy.
That's a lock.
That was a layup.
Can you name any players in the NHL that are from France?
This is a goalie podcast.
I was just gonna say that was exactly
that's a no. So that's a no.
but legit,
it doesn't matter. If people are going to discredit that because it's D3, then you're absolutely out to lunch. It doesn't matter what level you play. You could be playing the lowest level of men's league. If you're getting 9 shutouts in a row, that's bonkers. If you're letting in basically half a goal a game, insane. Save percentage, insane.
I have to come closer to the camera here because I need to stress my point. he didn't do this in like 11 games or like 9.
The whole season.
27 games under a goal against average and .967. This goes back to when we talked about junior hockey and saying play the whatever level you play, just dominate it, right? This guy signs a two-year AHL deal out over of Division III over D1 guys. Because he went to D3 and he dominated, right? That's an unbelievable lesson for those guys that are kind of in situations where they, you know what, maybe they didn't get that D1 offer. They got a D3 offer. They're playing U Sport or they got to kind of grind through the minors. If you dominate whatever league you're playing at, you're going to get opportunities. Mm-hmm. It's 27 simple. Games. That's cuckoo bananas.
Like you were saying, like I know you're going to use this as an example forever and ever, but for guys out there that are like just complaining and whining, like, oh, I'm not in whatever this league, I'm not in that league, I don't want to go out to this lower level junior A, like, shut the heck up, go there, do work, and someone is going to find you and someone's going to take notice. This guy went to D3, went to a good school, Norwich is a good school. And absolutely tore it up, sign a deal. You think he was whining, complaining he's playing D3? No. So why would you whine and complain that you have to have an extra year in Junior B before you go to Junior A? Just tear up Junior B and you'll be in Junior A the year after. It's just exactly. It's just you can't play there's so much victim mindset. Just do work, man. Just that's all it is. Just do the put in the work.
Yeah.
Play your best.
You know what the refreshing part of this too is? For a lot of goalie guys out there, a lot of goalies that want to play victim or they want to kind of build up their circumstance and excuses. If you hear a guy from D3 signs a two-year AHL deal, how tall are you just automatically thinking this guy is? Because a lot of guys are like, oh, he's probably 6'6", so someone's just giving him an opportunity. He's 6 foot. He's not 6'6". He's not 6'5". He is 6 foot tall. And he's getting these opportunities because – I don't know him. I've never met him. I got a call from a GM today and he told me about this kid. So I looked him up and I thought, this is insane. So I'm assuming he went there, didn't feel sorry for himself and just put the work in.
And he didn't give anyone a choice. His numbers were so good that somebody had to give him a shot. Like I was thinking, like, you can't leave anything on the table. He was so good. that someone somewhere was going to give him an opportunity. Unfortunately for him, that's awesome that he got that spot in the American League, but I'm sure he probably had a million offers from, at the very least, every team in France won coming after him. And then probably all the other leagues in Europe after him too. So, like, good for him.
I think being like local guys around here, sometimes, you know, their own mindset gets in the way where they think that they're too good for this league or that league, where, like you said, Jamie, you just got to put in the work, dominate, and make chances for yourself.
So he's going to have an opportunity to work with Pete Aubrey, who's the goalie coach for the Rockford IceHogs, who is starting to really turn out some pretty good NHL goalies in that Chicago system. So Colin Delia is one of his guys. So who knows, in 3-4 years, we could be hearing a Division III to NHL kind of story coming. So I wonder if that would be the first time ever in terms of goaltenders.
No, man, I don't know his name. He played in Anaheim. He went D3 and then signed in the NHL.
When did he play in Anaheim?
Albo, you're the trivia guy. This is right up your alley, man.
I know. I'm asking Jamie when this guy played for the Ducks.
I don't know. I'm not the trivia guy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's one that I don't know.
What value do you bring if you don't know the answers to the most obscure trivia questions?
The one time we need an answer. Okay, I don't know, but I got to go Anaheim Duck goalies. So it probably would have been in the 2000s.
It wasn't Guy Hebert, was it?
It might have been Guy
Hebert. That was Hebert. The 90s. Guy Hebert was like...
Yeah, but for some reason,
he went to Hamilton College.
Guy Hebert.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'm the trivia guy now.
You're the trivia guy.
How do you know that Guy Hebert went to Hamilton College?
Well, the internet told
me. Who, me? My brain told me. I told you. I'm never wrong. See, you're trying to scan, like you're trying to scan your brain for the last time I was wrong.
I'm not putting mental energy into thinking about you.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard that stat from, but he's one of the first guys. I mean, there's not a lot of D3 guys go and play pro. Pretty good. Good for Guy Hebert and good for the game. This guy.
Good for the game.
And you know what? At the end of the day, I want to talk about it. Because you know what, I've also noticed doing this that I always say at the end of the day, I really got to stop doing that.
Well, that's one that I say that you stole from me.
Yeah, maybe I did. Maybe that and the hand talking. But in terms of using it as a teaching point, I think it's good for a lot of the guys who listen to this to hear that, you know what, it doesn't matter where you're playing, as long as you're dominating and putting up numbers in that league, you'll definitely open doors and create opportunities for yourself. So like we've said a bunch of times, put the work in. Don't play the victim card, and then good things are going to happen. I almost said at the end of the day again.
It just takes time. Like, that's the thing that everyone, even when I was younger, it's just you want to do things right away, but it just takes time. You're in junior and you're 17. You still have 4 more years at junior. Grind it out. Find a way. Get to college. Then you have 4 more years of college, sometimes 5. Grind it out. Like, just... I don't know. You said it. We said everything that's to be said.
Yeah. You want to introduce our guest there, Philly?
Oh, yeah. So our guest today, pretty awesome. He's if you're listening to this podcast and you must be a goalie, you probably heard of it. It's Travis Rigdon, a.k.a. Trav4 Oilers. He's going to hate this when he hears it. He's a YouTuber, content creator.
Yeah,
all the words that he hates.
He's an internet influencer.
Internet influencer, exactly. But he's basically he's probably one of the most passionate guys about goaltending I've ever met. He documents his journey for everyone to see on Instagram, and he's got a really big following on YouTube. Really entertaining. He takes a lot of pride in what he does, and he's actually a pretty stand-up guy. So we'll get to know him more, a little more in depth in this interview, and really looking forward to showing it to you. Welcome to the pod. Travis Rigdon, a.k.a. Trav4 Oilers. What's up, buddy?
How you doing, buddy? I'm doing good, man.
So you're stuck in self-isolation. How are you keeping busy these days?
Self-isolation. I guess that's one way to put it. Still working on videos. Still, you know, trying to be creative. It's kind of tough because there's not a lot of, you know, I guess obviously you can't be working on a gym. So we've moved the workouts outside. And The ice times indoors have moved to synthetic ice outdoors. So trying to get a little creative here. Thankfully, the weather's been pretty cold lately, so still been skating outdoors, believe it or not, in April. Skating outdoors, yep. Outside of that, I don't know. Mixing a couple right swipes and, you know, trying to stay busy.
So you're great. Saying that it's cold out here skating. So you sent me a picture the other day. You're skating on the side of roads, getting your touches
yeah.
in.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, so the weather in Winnipeg was actually nice enough for skating outdoors for a little bit. I think the videos next week are going to have, like some shots of that. But, like, since then, like, the weather around here, like, it's been nice enough where, like, the outdoor rinks aren't good, but it's not cold enough where the rinks are – so it's, like, kind of like skating on a slush puppy. So my dad lives, like, 2 hours away in Lundar, and my dad is – I don't know how he comes up with some of these ideas. I mean, that's where I get it from. But he found this, like, little frozen, like, little river, almost like a big puddle on the side of this dirt road, like, a little ways away from where he's living. And he says, he calls me up one day. He's like, hey, son, you know, I found this little pond. This might be good for skating. You want to come out? I said, sure. Come out. Great ice. Middle of nowhere. There's nothing in sight except for this, like, little, like, frozen puddle on the side of the dirt road. So I've been going out there a couple times a week to go skate now. So that's the only ice I've been getting, like, real ice, so.
That might be the most Canadian thing I've ever heard.
Trust me, there's I got a couple of videos just on that, and I think it's something different. You got, you know, I got this drone shot the other day of it, and I wish I would have thought of it sooner. And I took it all the way up, and you see this little, like, in the map of things, you see this little teeny weeny, like, little frozen puddle, and then you pull things back. There's the road. There's all this grass, dirt, all this other stuff. But, like, it's almost like God Himself came in and was just like, here's a little frozen puddle, ski on. Like, that's what it looks like. And it's an absolute stunning visual. And Jamie, you saw a picture I sent you, but it's pretty cool.
But going to your videos, so obviously, if those that know you, you create videos on YouTube and you're a goalie and that kind of stuff, but you don't like the term influencer, YouTuber, content creator.
Just tightening up over here.
Yeah, so why is that? Like, why is that?
I think it devalues it. You know, like, maybe I've spent too much time in business courses talking about value and providing people value, and every word you speak should bring value. Everything you do, every action should have value to the people in the online community. So when you use the term content, it just makes me cringe a little bit. Like what is content? Anything can be content. Me talking to you right now could be content, right? But the whole concept of creating content, I say I'm creating a film. I'm creating film based on my endeavors, whether I'm skating on this rink on the side of the highway, if I'm working out outdoors, if I'm, you know, doing a Q&A, talking to the camera. Like, I'm creating films is what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to create content, because by definition, content would be just anything you can put online. I could share a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, and that's content, although nobody would read it. Maybe, I don't know. But that's the gist of things. And I think the term YouTuber is for anybody who makes videos, right? Like, if you put up a video, you're a YouTuber. But I think it devalues, you know, and maybe it's my ego speaking, but the fact that I've been able to take an idea and a vision of creating videos that you know, touch people and help people and kind of, you know, press all the right buttons to really bring things back and relate to people, and turn that into a full-time income and a full-time job to support myself. But I think the term YouTuber or influencer devalues it. I mean, you know, I love my mom, but, you know, the fact that maybe see my mom says to me, hey, you should buy Heinz ketchup over French's. My mom's an influencer. She's influencing my purchase decisions. So influencer is anybody who, I guess, gives an opinion on something you need an opinion on, right?
So what do you like? What's your title? Like, what do you... You introduced to someone, what do you say? Travis Ridgeden.
I make YouTube videos full time, and I consider myself a semi unprofessional filmmaker.
Filmmaker, that's all right. Well, I got that from now on. Filmmaker.
I stress the unprofessional part, because if you saw what I did on a day to day basis, you realize I run a very, very loose ship here. Very, very loose.
for what you've been able to build, I think you're coming at it from a very humble point of view. So humility generally leads to sustained long-term success. So good for you, man. I like the mentality.
If I could touch on that for 2 seconds. You know, I think that considering the hockey community, I think if you look in the small slice of things, I guess, like, what I've done is you've been successful, shall we say. But like I look at the big picture. You know, you have guys out there who are putting up, you know, 2, 5, 10, 100 million views of video, a million subscribers, and I'm putting up 10 to 20. Like we're talking a very, very small, minute drop in the bucket here in the grand scheme of things. Right. And I've always been in the mindset of to strive for more, prove and to chase something that I don't have. And although I've had success, and I'm not just saying because it sounds good, I don't see it as being a big thing. It's just I'm trying to help people that maybe were in the same position that, you know, me and my dad were when we were 10 and didn't have any experience at all. You know, coming into goaltending, like my dad barely played hockey or even knew how to skate. Like he still, when he was shooting pucks at me on that outdoor rink the other day, we were working some chest days and he was shooting like 20-yard field goals over my head. Like my dad had no experience at all with playing hockey. So being able to take that perspective of how can I help somebody in those shoes that doesn't get it, that doesn't know the game, the position, how things work, you know, like that's always been the goal, not success in the YouTube realm, shall we say.
Now, one of the things that I noticed about you when you first started talking a lot was, yeah, like your humility, but and the fact that you really are genuinely doing this because you love it and you're not doing it to make a dollar or to sell a product. Like you try different gear, but a lot of that gear you've purchased just because you want to show it off and you want to really review it. How come you don't do what some of these other kind of goalie accounts do, let's say, and basically get paid to promote specific brands?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I'll be honest, when I first started doing this, I had in my mind, if I can get things big enough, I'll get gear from every company on the house. And that's the dream. I'll get this gear, I get it for free, I'll sell it, flip it, make some money, get some new stuff. Like that was what I always had in my mind at the beginning, was that was the end goal. And as time went on, and when I got sticks from CCM, when I got pads from Bauer, I got all the stuff from all these companies, I started realizing I 24/7, 365 have to answer to these reps and to these guys. And if let's say like when Bauer sent me to three, or is it two sets of one-ass stuff? Anyway, they send me a bunch of gear. They're not giving it to me because they say, oh, Trav's a nice guy. You know what? Let's help them out. Let's get them a couple sets. They want it because they want to sell units. They want to move products. And if I'm not helping them do that, there's an issue. And I just started realizing, like, I don't want to have to answer to a rep. I don't want to have to cater towards companies, these big corporations that at the end of the day, they don't care about me. They don't care about you. They just want your money or my money in their pocket. And I thought, okay, well, If I cut the brand out of the equation totally and they all buy it, I don't have to answer to anybody ever. Like I have no responsibility or loyalty to any brand. I can do whatever I want. And I can, instead of trying to monetize things to the company side of things, I can try to monetize to the viewership side of things, the people watching videos. And although it's not as good paying of a gig as, you know, a company paying me, getting the ads off YouTube, I think builds that genuine experience, a realistic feel of, you know, Jimmy, who's maybe 8 years old, starting goaltending, his dad doesn't know what to get. Maybe he wants to nickel and dime things, doesn't understand the value of purchasing, you know, gear with a pro level quality to it. You know, understanding not all equipment is made the same. Yes, they have similar qualities, but there's real differences for real people. And there's gear that's going to work for you and it's not going to work for you based on how you play. Like that was the mentality that I wanted to take on it. And everybody's going to do their own thing at the end of the day, you know, good for the other guys who have built a following and built a, I guess, a brand, if you will, by working with these companies. But that's not how I want to play ball. I want to play ball by my rules and not by somebody else's rules. I want to help people. I should be honest and I should admit, though, this calendar year, every big company has offered to send me a free set of gear. Except for the one company that I wanted, Jamie Calavunas.
The one company that you would think is just absolutely making it rain on him because he loves the gear, but it's Warrior. Warrior refuses to help you out.
That was my main question. We do a lot of talking about gear between the three of us. And one brand that we have not mentioned is Warrior. And that's what you're wearing. So please, on Warrior.
You know, it's kind of funny because when I went from the Brian stuff, the Warrior stuff, originally like my old goalie coach, he was the one who recommended them. He said, hey, you got to try Warrior, give him a shout. You know, Brian's always getting the best experience. You know, the pro rep, you would hit me up and say, hey, I'll hook you up with some early access in the optics, the optic twos, give me your order. We'd fill in an order. And then a couple weeks later, he'd be like, oh, sorry, I guess they don't want to fill your order because, well, I don't know. and he just off or whatever. But so anyway, I was kind of at the point where I was like, I'll try something new. I ended up talking to Kirk Allen, the Warrior rep, and you know, he got me set up with some demos, the All Light G4 demos, the first Warrior set that I had. And that was just to kind of bridge the gap to the custom stuff that I got, and I really liked it from day one. I think I really do think, I'm not just saying this, the Warrior makes, in my opinion, of stuff that I've worn, the best product in the market. Like, Warrior's here, and the rest are playing, you know, little boy ball up here. Warrior's there with the big boys. So they make a fantastic product. The thing that irks me the most, I think, is that they have this great product. And obviously, I'm a business student. I'm halfway through my business degree. Having a great product is one thing. Customer service is what makes or breaks any company, any product. You have to take care of your people and get rid of that vibe of, I have your money now. See you later. Till the next purchase. I have that cash in my pocket. You're not getting it back. And at first, I was, maybe I was sipping the Kool-Aid a little bit of like, thinking things were as good as they were. And I thought that the Warrior would be that company. But as time has gone on, I've kind of felt the, we have all your money in our pocket. We're not really interested anymore, you know? And I've done everything in my power to, I guess, promote for what Warrior is all about. They're all about building a great product and letting it speak for itself. And they absolutely do. It shows the work that Pete Smith has put into the equipment. Everything that they do, it shows. But when, you know, I pulled Kirk Allen, my G4 stuff, had it for a year and a half. It shot. I shouldn't be using it. But the glove, I'm like, surprised I didn't break my hand with how many stingers I've taken off that thing. Like, the entire side wall of my blocker is ripped off. Like, the side wall is off. It is ripped off. And obviously, there's issues with the pad as well. And I said, listen, like, I need equipment. Like, you don't have to give me freebies. I will pay full price. Can you help me so I can get some G5s a little bit earlier? Or like something along the lines, like, I want to stick on the brand, I want to stay, and I want to promote for Warrior because I like what they're all about. And the answer, I always, well, usually I don't get an answer back, but if I do get an answer back, it's usually something along the lines of, sorry, you're going to be like just any other regular customer. And I get it. I want to take the role of being a regular customer, but I feel like I have the ability to help a brand that's doing the right things. And when they treat, I guess, situations like this the way they do, but meanwhile they fork out free gear to all the other guys, it's like, I don't think I want to support this anymore. And Jamie, tell me what my next set is.
Are we allowed to talk about it, or I guess, yes, you talk about it all the time on the channel. You haven't dropped the video yet, but I've seen it, and it's an unbelievable, just the whole Lefebvre factory, all their gear, everything. That I'm not sure when you're going to drop it, but you're getting a set of Lefebvre's. They have a lot of numbers, and it still confuses me. But so what number set of Lefebvre's are there?
Okay, so I'll try to clarify this for everybody. So Lefebvre, basically, they have the L87, which is the retro flex pad. It's literally a CCM retro flex pad with a different graphic, and it's the L87. You have the L4.1. And the 4 stands for 2004, which is when the original Primer line came out. So the 4.1 is literally a CCM Primer 2 pad, different graphic. Then you have the L12.1, 2012, which is when the E-Flex came out. It is literally an E-Flex 4 pad, different graphic. The special line that they have out that I'm getting is the 20.1. The 20.1 it's similar to a G4. It's almost a perfect hybrid between Primer and E-Flex. It's soft, but it's stiff. You know, it's light, it's razor thin, it rotates really well. And the technology that I saw when I was there at the factory was, I thought, second to none. I saw this and I said, I need to have a set of gloves on. I need to try these pads on. I need to try the whole thing out. They're making some special stuff. It's Canadian made. And the video review probably would have already been out by now, believe it or not, if the whole Rona pandemic didn't happen. But apparently, equipment is almost finished. Just the tail end of production, just sitting in a box waiting to be finished right now. So, whenever that the pandemic closes, that will be up and running again. And from what I'm being told, the review video is going to have Corey Crawford and Jonathan Bernier in it, and Zach Lucchelli.
Oh, not a big deal.
What a lineup.
Yeah. From what I'm being told by Patrick Lefebvre himself. So it's going to be a very exciting video.
You might be the first guy that is not French to be wearing Lefebvre. So you're a pioneer.
I got lots of stories from that factory. You know, it's kind of funny. I know I have like a very, from what I'm told, a very distinguishable Canadian accent, right? So obviously, I walk into a French factory where everybody's speaking French, kind of give me a couple odd looks. Patrick's a great guy, but I don't speak any French. Merci beaucoup.
So let's go back a little bit to when you started. What was the real, the turning point that you're like, hey, I'm going to start to film my career and my life, my journey, when for as hockey players, you know, we're reserved, the media things are always limited and controlled by teams. And a lot of teams really don't like cameras around, things that aren't sanctioned, things they don't control. So what was it for you that's like, hey, I'm going all in on this?
You know, it's kind of taking steps. Like originally, I wanted to do equipment reviews, which is what started everything off originally. And then I kind of started having these ideas one day of like, what if I film my own hockey? Because if we don't broadcast our games, what if I put that on online? That'd be kind of cool because like nobody really cares on here. So I started doing that. And then when I started like wanting to get a little bit more serious about like what I was doing with hockey, with the sport, you know, my entire hockey career, like, I've been part of like, you know, the middle of the bell curve people who they're not bad, but they're not good. They're not good enough to get over the hump, but they're not bad enough to get dumped, you know, dropped down. Like, you know, but you're not going to get over the hump. And that's kind of how I've always, you know, been in my career. And I just thought to myself, I said, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there who are in the same situation. They can't get the breaks that they want when they want them. You know, they're trying their best, but, you know, sometimes there's just that one thing missing. And I thought, if I'm going to get, you know, beat down by life and by the game, I might as well film it and put it on the internet. You know, I had this vision always as a kid that if I had the ability to, I would train 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And that wasn't feasible, obviously, because that costs money. You know, it costs money to have a trainer. It costs money to obviously skate for whatever the ice is going for, plus an instructor. All these things just add up to a very big, huge cost. Obviously, that money has to come from somewhere. And right out of high school, I was working full-time jobs. And I always said to myself, if I could not work a full-time job and just play hockey and turn that into an income, I would do it. And then as things kind of started to roll, I started to see like, if I took this a little more seriously, started posting more footage and, you know, sharing it with people, I think I could turn this into something where this is my full-time job. And I can also give myself the ability to train more often, to skate more often, and to make this all I do. So that's kind of how that, I guess, snowballed into what it is. But I guess at the end of the day, it's just been about trying to be relatable in the sense that a lot of us aren't fortunate enough to, you know, play in the CHL or play D1 hockey or play real pro. Most of us kind of struggle to get by. And I think a lot of people feel isolated that they're on their own, like on their own little island, because that's kind of what goaltending is. But, you know, I've tried to maybe bridge that gap, shall we say.
That's perfect. That actually carries right into my next question is you. So doing what you do, you kind of live a life similar to a professional hockey player, and you get to meet pros, you get to meet top of the line goalie coaches. You get to have these experiences all over, you know, North America. What's something that surprised you when you first started to meet like professional goalies and hockey players that you would never have thought if you didn't start this journey?
Probably the first one is that this guy's actually willing to talk to me and give a shit about me. You know, like for example, like I'm not just saying this because like we're on the call, but you know, like when you hooked me up with those Moose playoff tickets that one time, I was like, holy shit, this dude's giving me tickets. Like, I'm a schmuck. And I, like, you know what I mean? Like, that was the thought process. And I guess it still kind of is the thought process because, you know, when, you know, I'm skating with, you know, Stephen Keegan, who these people with these pedigrees and the status is like, I played junior B hockey. I played shit junior B hockey in Manitoba, and these guys are giving me the time of day. Like, I'm still dumbfounded that people want to give me the time of day because maybe I've just spent so much time, you know, around lesser status people, and I still identify with that. But I think a lot of the people, you know, the more knowledgeable guys in the community, you know, goalie coaches or professional athletes, obviously such as yourself, is just how simple the game is, how base level everything is that gets worked on, mechanics to the technical to the tactical, all of it. It's super base level that it's not entertaining, it's not exciting, it's not really anything, if we're being honest. That was probably the biggest thing that shocked me.
What a lot of people don't know as a goalie coach, the most boring time to be a goalie coach is in season, basically from September until March. You work on the same three things. It's not till the off season where you can kind of broaden your horizons and kind of open up that scope and do some other things. But when you talk about the simplicity of it, man, it's simple to boredom for a lot of it, but that's the details that gets the job done. And that's where you build the successful goalies.
Well, it's something I wish I would have learned more so like earlier in my career, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, that this, let's do an RVH, jump up and down 3 times, click our heels together, spin around, maybe we'll go do laundry at the same time, then go back to an RVH incorporation hour. So like that doesn't get the job done. It looks good on Instagram. It looks good for filming purposes, not practical. And I was sipping the Kool-Aid when I was younger because I didn't have any experience. I'd like, that's goaltending right there. Truth be told, it couldn't be any further from the truth.
That's exactly it. Like when I was younger, like, you know, minor hockey, and a lot into junior before college, is I would always be bugging Derek, like, I need to do this, and this thing's new, I gotta try this. And then if you look at the last 5 or 6 years of our coaching together, you've done what? Skating, tracking, not pancaking my blocker. Like we've been worked on 3 things for the last 6 years, and that's really like all it is. It's not, there's not some elusive formula that pros have it every day they're waking up, and it's exactly what you said. They're not going, oh, we're going to work on RVH integration with our post edge, this shoulder height. It's none of that. It's just hit the post, step out, track the puck, track it. You're not tracking it. Watch the puck. Like simple stuff. And that's like, and that's where a lot of young kids don't get that. And they don't want to work on the details because, like you said, it's not glamorous. It doesn't look good on the internet, but it's those small things repeatedly. That's what makes up a good goalie.
I want to speak to that. I remember years ago when Jamie was kind of at the tail end of his tech time going into pro, and I would, you know, I was hanging around on ice all the time. I would see Derek and Jamie on the ice together, and I'm thinking, you know, they're not really doing anything complex. They're not doing anything that a 9-year-old kid wouldn't do. Like, what's going on here? There must be some reason why what they're doing is so basic. And it really is the basics that get the job done. Those are the little things that like are the foundation of your game with every save. So like simplicity is really the ultimate answer. And after seeing the way that Derek and Jamie train and the way that the other pros that come through there, they train, it's always the most basic things, the fundamentals. It's not, you know, the flash and the glittery stuff.
Now, so with, you know, carrying a camera around wherever you go, you must have run into some awkward situations when it comes to new teams, new coaches. Like, what are some of the wild things that you've experienced for one, asking a coach? And then what are some of the things that in general, like that as a goalie that you've put up with for some crazy coaches?
You want to go to the filming set first?
Yeah, let's go filming first.
Filming is interesting. I think as far as the players go, I'd say usually the players are like a 70-30, maybe even a 75-25 split between like 70 being like, this is the coolest thing ever, I'll be your best friend when the camera's on, and like everybody's all for it. Then there's like the 25% that are like, get that away from me. I don't even want to see it. I don't even want to look at you or breathe in the same direction as you, which is understandable. Like not everybody's a camera person. Like I'm pretty open and pretty comfortable with it. Obviously I've been doing it for a while, but a lot of people aren't. Coaches, I would say, by the way, coaches are probably like 30-70. 30% are like, this is cool, this could benefit the program, puts money in my pocket, all that kind of stuff. And then 70% are like that's not hockey. That's selfish. That's not a team player. Get out of here. I don't even want to talk to you anymore. So you kind of, like, I've learned as time has gone on. At first, I was always in the mindset of ask for forgiveness, not permission. That didn't go very well. And now I kind of, you know, feel it out. You know, is coach open-minded? Are we kind of, you know, vibing each other? Is he a stiffo? Because if he's a stiff, I'm not even going to even think about bringing a camera within a 10-meter radius of the rink or a 10-kilometer radius of the rink. If he's a cool guy, maybe I mention it, see how he kind of handles things, then we go from there. That's basically kind of the reception of it. You know, if I'm on my own, I'll film whatever I want. If I'm, you know, with a couple of buddies skating or if I'm on my own skating, usually goalie coaches I work with, they understand it, they're cool with it. It's usually like the actual teams and the actual coaches that are, you got to be a little more careful of.
Now, some of the wild things that you've seen as a goalie, like that you've had to deal with when it comes to head coaches.
Head coaches. Oh, boy, we could be here for a while. I think the craziest one would be, I was playing AAA at 16, playing a road game, but 2 minutes left in the first period. Guy comes in a breakaway. I think he beat me out, beat me to the far post. So it's 1-0 failure game. coach gives me the yank, and I'm like, what? Like, I don't think it was a bad goal. I thought it was a pretty good goal. I almost got it. Come to the bench, and he says, Reggie, I come over, and I was like, what's up, coach? He's like, I want you to sit there. I want you to think about what you just did, okay? And I want you to go back in. All right, sure thing. I take my gloves off, my helmet off. I'm figuring, okay, we'll let it ride out for the third. I'll go back in a second. About 10 seconds goes by. He's like, Reggie, get over to the bench. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, you're going back in right now. Coach, the play's going on. He's like, I know. And he opens the gate, and he like grabs him by the jersey. He's like, get out. And so we changed him to fly. The other goalie must have been in it because he came right in the second I came. And the other team fires it at the empty net. They missed by like a good amount, but like still they tried taking the shot, and that was interesting. Never changed on the fly before. We also didn't have jerseys for warm-ups because our coach got pulled over before the game. That's another story. But that was definitely an interesting one. That same coach, we had one game. This is like one of the last games before the regular season. We're in a dressing room, big locker room, and he cut and he boots open the door, like steel toe boots, boom, boots it open. And he goes, boys! And we're 16 at the time, and everybody's like, what is going on here? Coach is supposed to blow a gasket here. Boys, we're not here to play hockey. We're like, what is going on here? Like, it's coach, you know? He's like, we're here to look good, okay? You guys are in high school. There's a lot of good-looking girls up there, okay? This is your time to shine. And then he walked out, slams the door, and we're all looking at each other like, what has just happened here? You know? Like, we're just talking about being recruited, you know, in the Western League for practice the other day with scouts coming, and now we're talking about this. But that was definitely two of the most standout stories, I would say, as far as
we had some questions. We asked some of the young goalies some questions. Boos, you had one from – you had a few questions, right?
Yeah, so –
Q&A.
Yeah, Q&A.
Your favorite.
Q&A, do the intro.
Oh, before we jump into the actual question, not a lot of people take the time to – you genuinely enjoy answering questions from – fans, viewers, goalies, like, you know, that just goes back to showing like that you are genuinely interested in this and you're not just trying to big dog everyone for that. Like, especially if I was a young kid, like that's one of those things that, you know, is really appreciated. The fact that you take time and you read all the comments, you do everything, and like you put effort into really relating and trying your best to, you know, improve the experience of your viewers.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is trying to like read and try to reply and engage with everybody. Things have been a little bit slower late with the whole pandemic thing, but even like at the beginning before that, there was like 300, 400, 500, 600 comments a video. You know, if with three videos a week going up, if I was to spend the time to like read everyone and give everybody like an intricate reply, like, that's all I'd be doing, right? But and you know, the videos aren't easy to produce. They're a full on production. Like anytime I come up with one of these videos, normally for 6 to 10 minutes, give or take, but it's a solid, you know, 7 to 10 hours of editing just to get one video done. So I feel guilty that I can't reply to everybody and like give them like the most intricate answer possible. And that's kind of why I came up with the Q&A, is it's a good way to kind of fill time in the video and also give that really intricate answer with like a personal response versus, you know, typing on a keyboard. But, you know, it's nice to be able to engage with people. I think it bridges the gap between some guy on the internet, my phone screen, and me to kind of like make it more personal. But it does bug me a bit that I can't reply to everybody. There's not enough time in the day.
How do you deal with adversity? And what have you learned that helps you overcome that stuff?
Deal with adversity. Just kind of accepting it for what it is. I think the biggest thing, and I don't think I'm playing hockey right now or still doing YouTube if I didn't embrace this mindset last summer, is that everything is up to interpretation. Like, you know, for example, you asked me that question. I could take it personally and be offended. I could take it as a compliment. Like, there's so many ways that I can interpret things. And everything in life is based on meaning, right? So it only has the meaning that I give it. So when the shit hits the fan, coach says you're not good enough, see you later, you're cut. I can get pissed off. You know, I can show up at his house later that night. Or I could say, here's an experience. I wasn't good enough. Let's look at things from a statistical point of view. Why wasn't I good enough? Let's just look at the numbers. Why wasn't I good enough? Not biases and stuff. And let's move on here. And I think people take it personally. I think people really take it personally in a blow to the ego that they weren't good enough, or something went wrong and coach did me wrong, or somebody screwed me over, or somebody's fault. It obviously wasn't my fault, because why would I ever have any fault in my wrongdoings or my shortcomings? You just accept it and you got to move on. Life.
What a lot of guys can't understand, it's very cliche, is you have to control what you can control, or control the controllables. And I don't think kids learn or understand that until they get into the later ages of junior. And that's one thing that's drawn me to your channel is you've kind of embraced that. And a couple of your videos you talk about, you're just like, I just wasn't good enough. I can choose to quit or I can choose to get better and keep working. And I think a lot of guys struggle with that the first time they face adversity. So what would you say to those guys that are kind of going through that right now?
Yeah, it's for sure tough for those guys. You know, if we're being honest, guys like Jamie or guys who, you know, they've played D1 or they've played in the CHL, they, in my eyes, they haven't experienced a lot of adversity because there's been a lot of ups, maybe a couple bumps in the road, but a lot of ups for the most part. But the guys that face it regularly kind of become accustomed to it, it kind of becomes the norm. I think the hardest part is dealing with the ego blow that everybody thinks they're good enough. Like, I think I'm good enough to play Canadian college hockey. Am I? No. Well, there's a reason why I'm not, right? And based on those reasons, how do we improve? There has to be things that I can work on in my game, whether it's on the ice, off the ice, my mental approach, who I am as a person, that will contribute to the goal. And I'm a statistical-based kind of person. I have a goal. Statistically speaking, how can I get to it? I don't care what it's going to take. Part of accomplishing that goal is putting my ego aside. And maybe that's my ego also speaking, but you gotta cut away to the core, cut right to the root of it. How do we go from here? How do we build from this? How do we build off this negative and turn it into a positive? And I think a lot of guys struggle with that at all levels, especially guys that maybe aren't familiar with taking blows.
Yeah, I like. Go ahead, Jimmy.
No. You go.
That's okay. I have to cough anyway. Just go.
Is there anything you would change about your filmmaking and your hockey journey together? Is there anything you'd change if you could go back in time?
I think if I was doing this whole filmmaking thing when I was younger, I definitely think that would have hurt my career. I think about the point now where as I've kind of become an adult and gotten a lot older, I think it's been more accepted and it's done 10 times more positive than it has negative for the most part, I would say. There's a couple negative things here and there, but for the most part, more positive than negative. As far as my hockey career goes, the biggest thing that I wish I would have understood or accepted was not being content. You know, you meet one goalie coach, and because you never had a goalie coach, you're like, this guy is the man. He is the holy grail. He knows everything. And then you get a second goalie coach, and a third, and a fourth. And you start understanding these guys didn't know anything at all. And, you know, like, just expanding your horizons of learning, right? Nobody ever knows everything, right? That was a big thing. And I think understanding what the definition of hard work is, that cliche, it's almost as bad as content or influencer, but you work hard, right? You work hard, you control the controllables, and you do the right thing. What does that even mean? Like, seriously, when you got 20 guys trying out for a position, whether it's AAA, high school, you know, junior, what doesn't matter? What does that even mean? Because I guarantee you all 20 guys have been told that, and 18, maybe 17, maybe even 19 of those guys are going to get told no. So you did those right things, you worked hard, and you bought into the system, but you didn't succeed. Right, and I think that the big thing to take away from all those lessons, because everybody says it, is that I guess the best way to put it would be it's not the be-all, end-all, and it's not a guarantee for success. And one of the big things I talk about with John Stevenson, the sports psychologist that I work with, is the performance equation in life and in sport. So the performance equation is A times B equals C. So C is your result, A is what you control, B, you have no idea what it is because you don't have control over it. So let's say the answer of C is 16. So I'd probably like to be around a 4, I think. I'd be comfortable if A was a 4, C is 16. You don't know what B is going to be. You have no control over it. It could be 0, it could be 100. So you don't have control over the results if you really think about it from that perspective. So doing the right thing, sticking to it, doesn't guarantee success. And I think having blows to my ego of not succeeding, thinking that that was the recipe for success, enabled me to fail further and kind of go down the wormhole of feeling sorry for myself as opposed to picking up the pieces and let's take another stab at it.
Well, I heard that you are actually a chef or went to cooking school or work in the cooking industry one way or another. I don't know if you've ever been a line cook or what, but I see a lot of similarities between the cooking industry and being a goaltender because you got to maintain calm in the chaos. Kitchens are absolute war zones, and sometimes being a goalie is the same. Do you see any similarities there? Has anything in the cooking world helped you with goaltending?
Do you see that in Steve's video that he mentioned, Red, or no?
What's that?
Was that, did you pick that up from Steve's video or what?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I knew it. That, when he sent me the video, I was like, I'm going to get 1,000 questions about this now. You know, like, I try to not make the videos about myself, more so just like using myself as kind of like the crash test dummy for like experiments and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I went to culinary school. That was actually an interesting story. So in high school, at least in Winnipeg, you have the option to do like electives. So you can do like a women's fitness or biology or any of that kind of stuff. My buddy and I at the time, we were both playing hockey, and we said, you know what would really get us laid? Going to culinary school. That's going to be like the golden ticket to the chocolate factory right there. So we signed up. He accidentally signed up for baking school. I don't know how he managed to screw that one up. I went to culinary. I hated it because I thought it was going to be like a whole mech class, and it turned out to be like an actual kitchen with a chef who like yell and scream and throw shit. So that was interesting. I didn't pass it. I almost failed, actually. And he told me on my way up one day when I was leaving, he's like, if you were to work for me, I would have fired your ass so long ago. Like, you'll never succeed at this. And like, my ticker went like, okay, we're going to go prove him wrong here. So nice. I signed up for an apprenticeship instead of working, and I apprenticed for 3 years as a cook. And then I did 1 year as a baker, working as a head baker. So I definitely use that card a lot on Tinder. I'll tell you that much.
That's amazing. I want to tell you why I ask. It's because people have, younger people or more general people, whatever, they have this kind of mentality of what I'm doing right now is not what it's not what I want to be doing. So I'm going to half-ass it, or I'm not going to give it my all. I'm just going to go through the motions until I'm eventually doing what I'm doing. But at the end of the day, whatever you're doing, you've got to put everything in because you're building habits. You're learning something, right?
Yep.
So that's kind of the way I see it. And I just wanted to see what you had to say about that. Cool answer.
I think it's more so attention to detail. Like you have to understand, like whether like as a baker or when I was a cook, there's an attention to detail of either you do it nice or you do it twice. Like, simple as that. But in hockey, there is no doing it twice. It's you do it nice or you can go and try out for another team. So that attention to detail, I think, is big. It is a big part of being a measuring stick to life and to the game as well.
Absolutely.
Good question, Owl.
Thanks, man.
I like that one. I haven't been asked that one yet. In that form. I've definitely been asked that question, but not in that intricacy.
Sometimes when Alvo's going to ask a question, I got to hold my breath a little bit. But that one worked out well.
I'd laughed.
I didn't know where he was going.
Jamie's just cringing over there.
I was cringing because it was so out there, but it was like a boomerang. You went really far, but you brought it right back. So I'll give you that.
That's right.
Well, at least it's not one of the questions. Like, you guys are like, who's your favorite goalie? What really got you excited about gear? Hey, do you want to meet Jake Allen? How do you feel about meeting? Listen, buddy, I'm not meeting Jake Allen. Jake Allen doesn't know who I am, so don't ask stupid questions. I like that question. That was a good question.
Can someone tell Jake Allen?
Talking to Boogers like walking through landmines. You're going to hit one.
I know Jamie and I talked about it a bit, but when the Rona thing ends and I come out, this man, Boog, you're moving to GoPro 24/7. I heard you're just a walking soundbite.
I can't confirm or deny that. I do my best on this podcast to behave, and I have to remind myself all the time.
Well, good thing I've got a lot of cameras and microphones on me.
So you've skated with a lot of different goalie coaches. Have any of them, like, you know, did everyone like kind of try to like sway you into being, you know, their spokesperson or their guy, like, or you just pay to go to camp, or like how does that work?
How do I say this without giving myself some serious hot water? There's a man who I don't even know how I'm going to say this here. Okay, so there's this guy who made me the offer. I would like to personally pay for you to go to every goalie school in Canada and shit talk them in a video and then promote for my camps. And I was an astronomical amount of money for what he does, which makes sense. But that was really the only, like, I'll pay you off kind of deal. And obviously, I declined that because I didn't want to do that.
So he offered to pay for you to go to goalie schools and then shit talk the goalie schools on camera.
Yeah. So he asked me, he's like, hey, I'm going to be in town. I'd love to take you for lunch for a cup of Joe. Let's have at her and see where she goes. Okay. I thought we were going to talk goaltending, have a really insightful talk. And the whole talk was him promoting a certain line of gear and asking if I'd be willing to go to camps to shit talk them to help put more kids in his camp. make videos, and obviously I didn't want to do that. He blocked me on Instagram since then. I don't know why, but yeah.
Where in what leagues in Europe have been calling you?
Sweden Div 2. That was a deal mostly based around me making videos to help bring people to games, which is fine by me. And where else is he working on a deal? He's working somewhere in Russia. I don't know. I have to check with the agent to double check on that one. But
so you have an agent doing this for you, or is it on your the European or North America too?
European, like is my agent from Europe or
no? Is the agent like finding you trying to find teams anywhere, or is he like European based?
Kind of. Well, I got two agents. I got a YouTube agent, believe it or not. That's making my life 10 times easier. Which is great. Good to have.
What's a YouTube agent? What does that mean?
So basically, he'd be like the equivalent of like my manager, shall we say. So like he sets up deals. Like he's the one who set me up at LaFave. He had a sit down interview with Don Cherry for me set up for probably last month or this month, but obviously the pandemic thing. Griff doesn't want anybody near his house. That's going to be put on hold. He's got stuff set up with Jimmy Howard. Like he's really putting in some work to like give me some opportunities to make some really, really cool films, which has been awesome. And he's a really cool guy too. Michael Lewis Self, doing a great job out of Windsor or London, sorry, to help me up. And then hockey agent, this guy reached out to me, a buddy of a buddy. He just said, you know, what do you want to do? I want to play Canadian college or somewhere overseas next year. He's like, okay, sure. I'll set it up, and whenever I get some signed, you owe me X amount of dollars. And I said, deal. You get that done, I will pay you, and I will make sure you're in every video for the next 6 years. Just get me signed somewhere.
I love the passion you have for the game. There's a lot of guys that have – they develop, like a weird relationship with hockey when they realize they're not going to make the NHL. Like, coach a minor midget, AAA, at the end of the year, I always say there's 50% of the guys in the room in the last game that'll never play another competitive hockey game in their life. And it's usually that's about spot on. But I try to get these guys when they're 20 years old and they're still playing the game because they love the game, then that's really the only goal for us. And you're now, what, 23, 24?
23, yeah. 24 in 2 months. God, I feel old.
And you still have a passion for the game and love playing the game. And that's just refreshing to see because you see a lot of guys that just develop like hatred for the game after it doesn't pan out the way that they've envisioned it to pan out.
I mean, I think it comes down to one of two things. I think it might be the fear of, like, I don't want to lose the game because if the game is all I know. Like, I remember, like, when I was 4 years old, I remember vividly my dad taking me skating for the first time when I was four. Fast forward 20 years, here we are still playing. I remember the first time they ever put on pads. Like this is what I know. And although I do lots of other things on the side for cash and things that I enjoy doing in life, hockey is a part of my DNA. I don't know what I'd do in my life without hockey. Like if you took hockey away from me, which is kind of what this pandemic's doing, kind of, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I do. So maybe it's the fear of like wanting to keep that alive. I think it's also, I love the chase. I don't know if you can tell. I love chasing down things. It could be anything in life. It could be, you know, 100-meter dash. You could be trying to make a hockey team, trying to, you know, make a new video, trying to, you know, get a cool drone shot. Like anything of like, I'm chasing a goal. I'm trying to accomplish something like that. Like, I love that. That's what I live for, even if it's like really stupid that I'm doing it.
So you have some options in Europe, but you are holding out to try to go to school. How come?
Free development, basically. You know, actually, believe it or not, this is something I've taken a lot of heat for online. I get shit on a good amount of times every day about this for, you know, what idiot in their right mind would say, yeah, I don't want to play pro. I'm going to go play college. Well, first off, this isn't pro. I'm not playing in the American League or the Coast, nor will I ever. This is minor pro, where I'm not even getting a salary. I'm going, I'm playing, I'm making videos, making my money and living in a place I've never been, as opposed to I can go to college, I can finish out my next 4 years of eligibility in Canada, or five in the States, and get 4 to 5 years of free development. Like, I've become a better goalie automatically from barring an injury, but from now until 4 to 5 years from now, I'm a way better goaltender. I'm a better goalie today than I was a year ago versus a year ago from that. It's just development. So why would I want to step into a pro game shittier than what I could be in 3, 4, 5 years from now? It's like, I think it's a no-brainer in my mind. And plus, the amount of money that I'd be spending on a round-trip plane ticket, paying my transfer fee, paying my living fees, basically the workout would be about the same for what it's going to cost me to go to college. Like, for playing own books, tuition, living, food, all that kind of stuff. So why not take the free development? I see no reason why not.
That's a good answer. There's a lot of goalies out there that are in your position would just jump at the prospect of playing pro just to say they played pro rather than, you know, really focusing and backing up and looking at the big picture in terms of you can go play pro when you're done college. You could just develop for a few extra years.
Well, and I think, too, a lot of guys do want to say they played pro. Obviously, if we're talking about somebody who's coming from D1 or coming from U Sport going to play in the American League or like an NHL deal, there's so much competition. There's such a small window to be successful. That's a different story. But when we're talking about middle of the pack Canadian college hockey and we're talking about very, very, very semi-minor pro, yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. I'm not making a shit ton of money. In fact, I'm probably making less money doing the pro thing than I would college with video-wise. So,
did you burn any NCAA eligibility when you signed with Columbus?
No, because I never played a game, and they never gave me my paycheck either. So no, I didn't burn my eligibility.
You did? Did you sign like pen to paper?
Yeah, I signed pen. Well, I've had pen to paper, but yeah.
Well, I don't know how that works. So I thought for sure that you'd be ineligible.
No, because I signed the deal. I signed the deal. I went out, and from what I was told, I'm on the team. Then we had a guy drop down from the SB, and then that was basically see you later. You've been released. But I did get paid in a lot of Pizza Hut and Golden Corral. That was basically our meal plan. True story. I'm not kidding you. Like
the NCAA is gonna hate. They're gonna see Golden Corral all you can eat buffet. They're gonna go right after you.
And the NCAA? Oh, the NCAA. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you're a new pro team and you're kind of broke, I mean, I guess I don't mean that the negative way, but like when you don't have a lot of money, you gotta give the guys what you can. But I mean, I like to think you can come up with something a little bit better than cinnamon sticks and pepperoni pizza buffets and deep fried chicken. But
no, that might be the most American thing I've heard.
That's the the federal league, man. The per diem, the guys are getting like $6 a day.
Oh. Well, you can afford
I didn't even get my per diem package. I was making $125 US a week. That was what I signed for. And so coach is like, okay, hey, everybody, we got tickets for Golden Corral. Everybody, we're going to go eat a Golden Corral. And like, I probably haven't been to Golden Corral in 10 years at this point in time, maybe 12 years. So I'm like, this is good. They got lots of stuff. They got veggies, meats. Like, this is going to be great. Walk in there. The dessert tray, like the dessert table is bigger than any of the other tables. All they got is like pudding, pie, ice cream, all that kind of stuff. I go over to the veggie tables. There's rice, mashed potatoes, and more mashed potatoes. I'm like, okay, you guys got any carrots? We got like a little thing over there. It's like this little dinky tray like this of carrots. I'm like, okay, I'll get some like veggies. You guys got any like baked fish, or baked chicken breast, like something like this, like that's gonna make you feel good. We got deep fried fish, we got fried chicken, and we got chicken fried steak. Well, I'm having the shit so for tomorrow's skate.
Oh, any more questions? This is a good chat, man. We have to turn this into a get you on for a couple part two, part three.
Oh, I just had like this deja vu. We'll have to get you on for a two part or not a big deal, but
or when you come. When you come to skate, we'll do a live pod. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. Really good episode. I think, you know, you're a very candid person, and hopefully this shows a little more behind the scenes about what you do and the kind of person you are, and we really liked it.
Thank you very much for having me on. Thanks for a good talk.